Thank you. We're joined, as usual, by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
And University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
We're looking at the top stories of Rhode Island politics in 2013, and there was a lot of prologue for next year's race for governor. Democrats Angel Taveras, Gina Raimondo, and possibly Clay Pell are running. On the Republican side, the candidates are Ken Block and Alan Fung. So, Scott, what did we learn about these candidates new in 2013 that we didn't know before?
Well, not as much as we're going to learn in 2014. And the real reason for that is we haven't seen these folks go head-to-head in debates, for instance. The press scrutiny has not been ratcheted up very much. However, what we do know on the Democratic side is that Gina Raimondo has really swamped Angel Taveras in raising money. This is going to be an uphill battle for him if he can't get more money. Right now, she's got on hand about $2.3 million in her campaign kitty. Angel has less than $800,000. I don't believe he can get outspent 3-1 and win this primary. I really don't. The other side, I think what we're seeing is Fung seems to have more of the Republican establishment, the town committees, the people in the Republican Party lined up behind him, and Block looks like the underdog at this point.
Maureen, tell us a little bit on your thinking about how this gubernatorial race will be similar or different from previous ones, and whether issues or style and flash will really prove decisive.
Well, I think certainly issues are going to prove decisive. I think we've seen Angel Taveras lay out a plan for education. I expect Gina Raimondo will come up with several ideas and initiatives. We have a really interesting group of young, very talented people. And so I think it's going to be a very interesting race. On the Republican side, I think Ken Block may surprise us a little. I would say that he's the underdog now, but it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. And a contentious primary might affect the chances of the Republicans. We have to think about the context of this. Everybody points to Don Ciccieri or Lincoln Amon being successful, but that was against Mirth York. Mirth York was a liberal, a woman who couldn't really get a majority. And so the fact that the Republicans were able to come into office was not about gender or it wasn't about party. It was really about ideology. So we'll see how this one plays out.
Rhode Island remained plagued by persistently high unemployment in 2013. To some people, it looks like state leaders were ineffective and not bringing enough urgency to the issue. What do you say, Maureen?
I say the tide is turning. I really think there's been a couple of, first of all, at the national level, we see the economy is turning around. And that's bound to have an effect, you know, down the road for us. I also see Marcel Valois at the Economic Development Corporation or the New Commerce Corporation making some strong initiatives. We've seen story after story of effective loans being made to small business. I think there will be a discussion about taxes, but everyone is mindful of, for example, protecting some of the business interest and not creating a burden on business. So I really think that the jobs mantra is going to continue throughout the election. But whoever actually wins in terms of getting office, I think is going to be sitting on top of an economy that's going to blossom after they take office.
Scott, how would you evaluate the performance of state leaders and the General Assembly on economic issues this
year? In a 21st century global economy, I'm not sure what they can do at the state. House really influences the state's economy very much. It's not like 1952. I do think that one thing that they should focus on, and they haven't enough, is addressing the undereducated workforce in Rhode Island. We're in a regional economy. We compete with other New England states, particularly in Massachusetts and Connecticut. Both of those states have invested more money in their state universities and in their K through 12 systems. They both spend more money per pupil. On students, money isn't everything, but it's certainly something when it comes to investing in your workforce.
Well, I agree, but I really think that's going to be an issue. We've already seen Angel Taveras lay out a plan that's going to require some investment, but does look down the road. I would be very surprised if someone like Gina Raimondo doesn't come out with another plan talking about workforce training. She's also indicated that she's interested in that. I can't see one candidate not talking about investing in education, even though the budget is strained. I think that's one area where you're going to see a lot of creative support for education across the board.
Yeah, but are they going to raise taxes to do it or get the revenues to do it in a meaningful way?
Well, that remains to be seen, but I think there's going to be a push for that.
One of the top stories in Rhode Island in 2013 was the legalization of same-sex marriage after a 16-year fight. Scott, why was it different this time?
Well, a couple of things. First of all, public opinion on this issue has changed rapidly over the last, I would even say, 5 years. The other big thing was getting, frankly, rid of Governor Don Carcieri, who everybody knew would have vetoed a bill and had the legislature passed it, and getting Lincoln Chafee in there, who was a big supporter of this. The third thing I would point to is the same-gender marriage folks had a really good campaign. They really put the pressure on legislators, wavering legislators. They brought in religious folks to counter the bishop, some folks from the more liberal mainline Protestant denominations, for instance, were brought in to counter Catholic Bishop Tobin. And they really had a well-financed, well-focused campaign. And that's really, I think, what turned the tide this time.
Considering the strength of that campaign, Maureen, what lessons do you think it offers going forward? And what other issues might we see it applied to in Rhode Island?
Well, I mean, I think the interesting thing about public opinion can be applied also to the gun lobby. That is that we talk about the fact that the gun lobby is successful, but they are successful in narrow spheres. And the impression is that they are successful across the board. But as we saw in Exeter, once people knew, thanks to the media, what was really going on, they could make an informed decision.
And you're talking about how voters in Exeter recently defeated a recall attempt against four town councilors.
Right. And I mean, and so I really think that it has a lot to do with prospective gun legislation. Once people know what the story is, the public, there'll be a better match between what gets legislated and what the broad public really want. It'll be very interesting. There's a woman that's a legislator who's been very supportive of the gun lobby, and she wants to run for Congress. There's Doreen Costa. She's going to have a hard time now, because when she goes into a broad field, that's, I think, going to be a millstone around her neck.
Well, I think that's a question mark, whether she's going to run for that, but we'll see. The effort known as Health Source Rhode Island is continuing to implement Obamacare in Rhode Island. It remains unclear if the General Assembly will have the appetite to allocate tens of millions of dollars to keep this program running. Maureen, considering how Rhode Island could have leaned on the federal form of Obamacare, does it make sense for the state to put tens of millions of dollars into keeping Health Source RI going?
Look, I think the first thing we have to realize and really applaud is the fact that this rollout went very well in Rhode Island, and it's doing very well. I also think it's premature to speculate about how large the fees will be, because the federal government keeps changing the game just about weekly. So we really have to see what this is ultimately going to cost us. When we find that out, given the progressive strain in our sort of culture, if you will, and given the success of this program, and if it continues to be successful enrolling people, I see that we can figure out a way to have fees or some sort of a formula that would underwrite the cost of this.
What do you say, Scott?
Well, people don't look enough at the cost of not doing this. Right now, the system's broken, and the fact is people without insurance show up in emergency rooms and hospitals, clog things up, spend way more money than they would if they just went to clinics and if everybody was insured and was in the market. So we've got to find a way to insure people who don't have insurance, and this seems to be a pretty decent rollout here in Rhode Island, in contrast, frankly, sharp contrast to a lot of the other states in the country.
2014 will be Governor Lincoln Chafee's last year in office. How will he be remembered, Scott?
I think, unfortunately for him, he might be seen more as caretaker than change agent, but I think he's run the government pretty well. There's been no scandals. He's cut the chronic overspending by state agencies. And, of course, same-sex marriage was a big victory for him.
Maureen?
I agree. And also, we have to remember that he was a critical dimension in terms of pension reform. If it wasn't for him and Gina Raimondo and the leadership in the House and the Senate, this wouldn't have happened. I think he got a bad break in negative publicity. But generally speaking, I agree he was a caretaker.
And he warned us about the Kurt Schilling 38 Studios mess.
Thanks for joining us on Political Roundtable, Scott.
Thank you.
And Maureen.
Thank you, and happy holidays.
We hope all our listeners had a Merry Christmas. We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage.